welcome to the Lucrative Podcast, episode number 13. Welcome back. Hope you're doing well. Hope you've had a great weekend, and I hope you've got some great plans coming up for this week as well. Little bit of an unexpected hiatus that we've taken here on the show, and it was very unintentional, and I can only apologise for it. The only reason I can really give to it is that, let's just say, I wasn't feeling in the most creative mindset, and I'll tell you why. Because I was making a little bit of an effort over last weekend to reconnect with some old friends and do some stuff that I haven't done in a very long time. One of those things being going to a nightclub in Manchester. I've never been out in Manchester before, never done it, so that was an experience, and I haven't been to a club in probably just over 3 years, and it was quite an experience, quite a sort of baptism of fire, if you will, and it was great to finally get back to that again. Good to sort of experience in that again, because I didn't know how I would feel about it. I was getting to feeling like a little bit of a recluse for a little bit, but nonetheless, it was really good, despite the two-hour-long queues to get into virtually everywhere, because we just happened to time it a bit wrong. It was when it's like in the heat of freshers at the moment, at the time of this recording anyway, so it was a little bit hectic trying to get inside to anywhere, but nonetheless, it was a lot of fun. So that's kind of why I've taken a little bit longer to get a new episode out, because I was just kind of recovering from that weekend and the experiences that had occurred on that one. So I needed just a bit of time to collect my thoughts, but we are coming back with a fantastic chat to share with you in a few moments. Just one other quick thing that I want to mention before we get into today's episode. I'm back properly on Bolt Radio. I've been sort of taking a little bit of a break on there as well, but I've finally got some new show hours sorted with the team there. So if you want to catch me on Bolt Radio, I'm now going to be presenting on Mondays and Tuesdays, 12 till 2 p.m. So if you want to catch me on there, hear some of the shenanigans that goes on there, and also some of the great tunes that I happen to play as well, then go and check me out on Bolt Radio. I'm going to link to that in the show notes for this one. So go and check that out. You can find a link on how to listen live to Bolt Radio on Mondays and Tuesdays. Let's get into today's episode anyway. This is with a very old friend of mine called Jack Hayes. He is a musician from Glasgow, and he's just started a new band, a new project, if you will, that are called The Exhales. I'm going to link to them in the show notes. They're a fantastic indie group. You should definitely give them a listen. And I'm going to link to their socials, like I said, in the show notes for this one as well. They were working on a new single, and me and Jack have known each other for a very long time, but just not really spoken to each other in probably the best part of many, many years. But we first met in 2014 when we were at sick form, and in this episode we were talking about it, and we reckon that was also probably the last time that we spoke to each other, because we both left sick form in our first years and kind of moved on to different things. But it was just a great chat and really nice to reconnect with him again. He's got so many exciting things on the go at the minute. And we just talked about what it's been like living in Glasgow, what it's been like sort of readjusting to the music scene over there, how he's been working on stuff, creating things. He's also been back home. He lives not that far away from where I am. And we're talking about sort of how the music scene differs and the musical approaches compared to where he used to live to where he's living now in Glasgow, and also what are some of the things that he's discovered from being a music writer and performer, and some of the little things that he's learnt along the way as part of recording, producing, and also performing live. It was a great chat, this one, and I really enjoyed reconnecting with him. So let's get into this episode anyway. Episode number 13 of Lucrative with Jack Hayes.
It's nice to see you. I know you can't see me, but it's nice to see you, mate.
It's nice to see you too, fella. Nice little thumbnail pic you've got there.
Oh, it's my edgy thumbnail pic, that. How's my mic sounding? Is the compression good on it?
Dude, it sounds crispy AF. That sounds nice.
Good stuff.
Is that that's the NT1, is it? NT1A?
Yeah, you get it as like a I get my first studio. And they send you it. The funny thing is, it's not even mine. It's my guitarist's.
Oh, like, is
how
it?
Cheap I am. Yeah. I don't spend money on this stuff, mate.
Nah, man. That's one of the joys about being in a band, isn't it? You just jack all this stuff as you go along and then just claim it as your own.
The only thing is I can't take his guitars because he's left-handed.
Oh, gutted.
It's a nightmare because he's got like a... His guitar costs like $2,000 and it's bloody gorgeous.
Jesus, really? What's he playing?
Called a Duesenberg.
Yeah, I know Duesenberg.
And it's like... It's in this really nice blue, but it's just like... Oh, man.
I'll tell you what I'm really into at the moment. Those D'Angelicos, is it?
Yeah. They used to be... They were around like a while back. And they were like avant-garde guitars. They're strange headstocks, aren't they? They look old.
Yeah, because they've kind of got like a reputation now, haven't they, for being sort of like a very indie kind of go-to guitar. A bit like how the Jaguars and the Jazzmasters were for a bit. And they're kind of like, I don't know, I've seen a lot of like math rock players using them online and stuff, and they just look sweet. Yeah.
I didn't know math rock players were into very flamboyant guitars. I think it's like proper hair rock.
Oh, really?
Guitars. Yeah, because it's just very like out there.
I mean, to be fair, there's such a range within those D'Angelicos. Like there's some that are quite sort of flashy and sort of very... artsy looking, and then there's some that you could imagine like just a standard hair metal or what have you, but kind of band playing. So I guess that's a good thing.
I've only seen the proper fancy ones. I think it's just because like all the artists I know that play them, they want the fancy one.
Yeah, no, because I mean, because again, those are like kind of models that aren't necessarily cheap. That you're still dropping a you know fair price on it, but I guess I mean if I was going to go for a new guitar, I would definitely want one of them flashy ones. I want to make a statement, you know, even if I play like shit, which I do. I'd want the statement if anything.
My most expensive guitar is like £250.
Oh, man,
because I just thrash them whenever I'm playing live. I beat them up, so it's no point me spending loads of money on them.
So what are you, like a heavy picker? Do you go sort of heavy-handed with your strumming, or is it just like life on the road, chucking it in the back of a car kind of thing? How do they get road worn?
Well, it's like they don't get road worn because of how they're made these days. Like, you know, they used to, but I mean more like I just chuck them on the floor and kick them at the end of the gig and make loads of noise. So
yeah, no, nothing much really. I just like Jimi Hendrix them and set fire to them, but you know they hold up well. So
to be honest, mate, if it was an outdoor venue, I totally would.
You got to make a statement, especially now.
Nobody forgets that, do they? Nobody forgets the guy that set his guitar on fire.
Nah, man. That is a statement. You know, like come back strong. This new band, first gig, I reckon torture guitar.
It's just funny as well because we're like proper pop music. It's just, at the end of like a song that your mum would listen to, just smashing up a guitar.
Yeah, just like a really slow melodic song, like maybe a guitar, like acoustic ballad or something, and then just go absolutely nuts, just like thrashing it on the floor.
I do that just to shock people, to be honest. That'd be quite funny. Do an open mic night. After the first song, then be like, I need to borrow a guitar. Has anybody got a guitar?
and then just do it again. Just like smash that one up. Oh, no, I need another guitar. And everyone's like...
Sorry, mate. I slipped. I dropped it. I didn't mean to.
Jack, you've gone through everyone's guitars. We don't have any more available. I'm just trying to think of a way that could there'd be a podcast equivalent. It's kind of difficult. Like at the end of a session, I'd just grab my mic or my computer and just throw it across the room. Yeah, what an awesome session.
Cut your cables to your mic. Just like,
cut
the
cables. Yeah, that's a good one.
Or chew them while alive.
Hey, that's a good one, yeah. That could be the end of season special, that I'll just gnaw a fat hole in one of the cables and blow it up or something. That would be cool. Anyway, what's been cracking? What's been happening with you? Because I was just thinking about this, you know, the first time that we kind of really connected. Well, first time we met each other, and it was it was back in the sixth form days, and I don't know if you remember this at all, but I remembered it just before, and I remembered us sitting in one of those maths lessons, and we were talking about stuff that we wanted to do. And back then, this was before you started playing guitar, like before you were even learning or anything like that, and you were saying, oh, I really want to get into guitar so I can be in a band and that kind of thing. And I was saying, I want to do podcasting. That's what I want to do. I want to do recording.
It's crazy,
and all
isn't it?
That. And here we are now, you know, like we're doing exactly that.
We are living the dream, mate. Living the dream. I do remember you saying about the podcasting, and because I remember you were always big into radio and stuff like that. I remember that, but I don't remember me saying that. I think I just...
Yeah, no, because it was even... That was before you'd actually got into learning to play, because... I'd been sort of dabbling with it at the time, and I think I think that's kind of where we sort of, one of the first things that we connected on was kind of guitar and that kind of thing. And then you mentioned that you were wanting to learn to play and all that kind of thing, and I guess it just all developed from there.
Sixth form is a blur to me, honestly. I think it was when I left, because I only did the 1 year because I did terribly and they told me I couldn't come back. After that, that's when I picked up guitar, because I was like, oh, well, I need to figure some out. And then, but I remember always being interested in it, because I remember being obsessed with people like Kurt Cobain and Jimi Hendrix, and just thinking how cool they looked. It wasn't even that, like, I loved the music. It was more like, just look at them, look how cool they are on a stage. Everybody's looking at them.
It was the same thing for me as well. And I was big into guitar music when I was at school and stuff. And a lot of my friends that I was with, they all played guitar, but it was more, I just loved the aesthetic of it. Like, I just loved the look of a Les Paul or, you know, the Fender Stratocasters and all that kind of thing. I just loved the look of it. And that's where it started for me. It was that whole sort of cool guy vibe, if you can call it that.
Well, I've always said that guitars are like a form of art in a way. I can just look at them for hours. I can go into a guitar shop and just stand there for like 5 hours just staring at guitars. So I get what you mean when you say that.
Yeah, I love guitars as well, to be fair. It's been so long since I've been able to like just go to a guitar shop and just sit and enjoy playing a guitar and stuff, because it's also funny, isn't it? Because I was in, the last time I went was like literally just to pick up some strings from R&T in Barrow. And a great shout out to the boys there. And I just went in, picked up some strings, and I asked if I could have a bit of a look around the guitars. And the way things are at the minute, they can't have anyone like hanging around too long in the shop, because they're operating that whole like one in, one out kind of thing. And I just miss that, you know?
Well, it's weird, because where you're living, I'm pretty sure when I went to visit Barrow, you don't have to wear a face mask when you go in places. But in Glasgow, where I'm living now, it's still a thing. So you can go into music shops, you can play whatever you want, as long as you're wearing a mask. I think it's because, obviously, we've got places like Guitar, so they're very big spaces. And then they've got so many staff. Like, as soon as you put a guitar down, mate, it's mad. Like, someone's running over with, like, spray and cloth.
Disinfectant, like, and all that, wiping you down with the guitar.
Yeah, they give you a shower and everything. it's pretty good.
Sounds awesome. Yeah, and a free COVID test as well on the way out. In Glasgow, is it still very much being enforced in all the shops? Because like round here, it's like you can just wear a mask if you like. It's just an idea. You can wear one if you want, but it's not being enforced.
You still get the odd person not wearing one, and nobody like. It's more of a. The staff don't feel comfortable to approach them to say, why aren't you wearing a mask? Because they're either shy, like I'd be, or they're worried about getting COVID. So it's, do you know what I mean? But like I think it's just because it's a city and it's different. Like everybody's wearing a mask. Like the majority of people wear it when they're not even in shops. I think now it's become a bit of a fashion thing, which is strange.
I'd say so. Yeah. Cause I mean, I've definitely seen that on Instagram, particularly when things first kicked off and there was all these designer masks coming out, like Gucci ones and all that kind of thing. And then I was in Manchester last weekend hanging out with some mates, went for a bit of a night out, and it was a totally different vibe to what I was expecting, because I was thinking that. I was thinking, how many people are going to be wearing masks? How many people are going to be abiding by the rules, so to speak? And get there and it's like literally just going back in time to early 2019. Nothing's happened. Everyone without masks. Everyone just like living their own lives kind of thing. And it was kind of bizarre, really. It's kind of strange.
That's so weird, because that's not even that far away. Well, it is far, but from where I am, and it's the complete opposite.
Have you been back much apart from to play the odd gig here and there?
Well, I played. We obviously played that one gig with my last band.
That was kind of your farewell, wasn't it? Wolf Peak, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was. So when we released an EP, we played an EP launch at the Odd Frog, and due to COVID, the Odd Frog might have been shutting down. So they did this big charity gig, and we ended up saving it. So it's opening back up. So anybody watching this likes cocktails and good tunes, go to the Odd Frog.
Get on down.
Exactly. But other than that, I surprised my family. So it's my older brother's birthday, and I said I can't come. So they were all slating me behind my back, like, oh, missed the big time, you know, living in the city. And then I showed up unannounced with like Krispy Kreme donuts.
Oh, and, legend.
I know. I was
the Messiah returns.
With donuts. But so yeah, twice I've been back. But this gig that I went back and did, I was under the impression that everybody would be like, oh, this is amazing. We're trying to save this local venue. But I was honestly expecting to show up and like two people be in the crowd, just because I feel like a lot of people in Barrow, a lot of my friends, and I was exactly the same, would be so buzzing that there was stuff going on. And I'd post all over social media how excited I was about going and then just not go. But everybody showed up. It was really full. It was actually quite nice to see that people were showing up, the people of a small town, to help a business of the small town. Do you know what I mean? Instead of just going, oh, we don't need that venue because we can go to the O2 in Manchester or wherever. It was nice that people actually showed up.
Yeah, it looked awesome in the pictures that you posted and stuff. I was just so good that I couldn't make it. How many other performers were at that?
Oh God, man, I didn't know there was that many artists in Barrow.
Yeah,
blew me away. So it started.
There was
at about
all five
1 o'clock.
Of them.
Yeah, and Fred, the guy on the banjo. But no,
Terry came up as well just after he finished flushing out the Strongbow line.
Yeah, exactly. But no, it started at 1 o'clock and there was an act on every half an hour and it went on till midnight when we finished. So you can sort of gauge how many bands. I'd probably say like, I want to say close to 100 at a push. And they're like, that's local bands. Don't get me wrong. There's like one guy that's pretty much in every single one of the bands. Do you know what I mean? Like that one drummer because nobody can find a drummer. But it was nice because it was just so much like variety of music. Like you go into the main room, the big hall in the forum where they do the shows, and they'd be like a really cool sort of country band. And then you go into the foyer on the little baby stage and there is a metal band, right?
Love it. I love that.
Screaming and shouting while Doris and Margaret are in the cash jar of the toast and tea. And it's just, oh man, it was brilliant.
That's fantastic. I just love gigs like that, that just bring like literally everyone together. Like it's so much fun, isn't it? Because you just get so much crazy stuff that happens.
Yeah, like they didn't just go, we want this type of music. They went, we'll have any, if you want to play this gig to come and help us, you can come and play this gig. It wasn't like, oh no, you're a bit too loud. Do you know what I mean? So it was nice. And funny story, my auntie Tracy, she doesn't like heavy music, but the first band to play, this metal band comes on. And at first she's like, what is this? And then at the end of it, she comes up to me and she goes, Jack, I was frightened and terrified, but I loved it. So now she's getting it like heavy music, which is, it's just nice that opened up somebody's, you know,
doors of perception and all that.
Exactly, man. Exactly.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Breaking down barriers.
That's what a good gig should be, and just in one synopsis, really, shouldn't it? Terrifying, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it should be scary. Because you remember those things, do you know what I mean? That's why people jump out of planes and go rock climbing, because it scares them and it gives them a feeling of
the adrenaline, isn't it? The sheer adrenaline.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. And if you've ever been to see a heavy band live, like I don't like heavy music, but I'll go and watch a heavy band play live just because it hits different in the room. You feel the sound hit you in the chest. It's
such a guttural thing, isn't it? I mean, I've just been sort of getting into a lot of the classics, really, over, you know, all this time that I've had to collect records and drain my wallet at the same time. But I've been like getting into like Motörhead and Judas Priest and all that kind of thing. And you are absolutely right. Like it just brings a new flavor to whatever it is that you've got in your regular musical rotation.
Yeah, I feel like everybody should always be sort of listening to new things. Like as a musician, I'd hope that everybody would be very open to new bands, but there is this thing where people won't listen to a band if it's not a hype. Do you know what I mean? So it's nice that my auntie was able to, you know, find a new don't want to say love, because I doubt she's sitting at home listening to Rammstein or anything, but like she enjoyed it. And
turns out she's a big Slayer fan now.
Yeah, she is. All the like Black Flag.
Loves Rain in Blood.
Yeah.
We'll have to look out for that one anyway. But the one thing that I wanted to ask you off the back of that gig, you coming back to Barrow and playing at the Odd Frog and stuff with your band Wolf Peak, was I wanted to ask you just how you found it in terms of the musical shift, like moving away, like from what you've been used to in Glasgow and then sort of coming back to Barrow and sort of reminding yourself of what it was like over here. What was that kind of like? What were your impressions?
Well, to be honest, mate, at first I was absolutely terrified because I hadn't seen the boys in 2 years, never mind practice. So we hadn't practiced in about 3 years and we had a 2 hours practice. But it's weird because we were involved in the local scene big time. We did play a lot of gigs in Barrow, but we always tried to get out of Barrow when we gigged. So it was actually like a new experience playing like the biggest venue in Barrow. Do you know what I mean? Like it wasn't something that I had experienced before. So it was nice to end Wolf Peak on that note because it was something new. Whereas we used to travel instead of sort of playing to people that we knew in our hometown, which I wish we did more. I really wish we played every crappy pub and every dive bar because memories at the end of the day. But yeah, it was a strange experience, even just like seeing the lads again, because it's you feel like you don't like you've not missed somebody because you've got social media, so you can speak to these people like every day. And then when you get together in a room after 2 years, it's dead emotional. And that day, a drummer came up to us and actually said, "Oh, I'm having a baby." So it was crazy. So it was a nice experience, all in all.
What a moment. What an awesome moment just to have that kind of last hurrah for the band. You're finishing on such a great note. There's so many different things happening for you all. And yeah, I just imagine that was such a great moment to finish on. If you don't mind me asking, like, what was it that kind of signaled the end for Wolf Peak? Was it just that cliche creative differences, or was it just really like you felt like things had been done, gone as far as you could down this road? It was time to go and explore new routes or what have you?
Well, it was a weird one, mate. Some of the members of the band would like to say my ego got a bit big, but that's not the case, really. I just loved my band, and it was the first band I was ever a part of, so I did like to talk about it, do you know what I mean? But the main reason was what you were saying, everybody was doing different things. Some of the members got married and were sort of starting new lives and needed to make a bit of money, because obviously when you're doing original music and you're not big, there is no money in it. So anybody listening now that wants to get into music because they want to be rich, don't. Even when you're big, you'll be struggling with money.
Just don't. Right?
Just don't. Because when you get money, you spend it on more guitars and more equipment.
Because yeah, it's an obsession. If it's not music equipment, it's just the music lifestyle, isn't it?
Yeah, you can't stop. When you've got the money, everybody lives to the means. So when you've made money, you will always spend that money because that's just what you do. But for me, and I've told the lads this, so this is what we mean, but for about a year before we split up, even when we were playing gigs, I kind of wasn't feeling it. And it was because I knew the lads in the band weren't really into indie music. They were all into pop punk. And so I'd bring a song to the table and it would be like, they'd like the song, but they wouldn't connect with the song, if that makes sense. So it feels like they were always just like jumping on the songs and they weren't able to be creative because it wasn't their thing. I mean, they were creative and they created some great guitar parts, bass lines, and our drummer was insane. But I just felt like we were all kind of holding each other back from what we really wanted to do. And then in the end, we were all like, it was all on good terms. So we basically showed up to practice one day and we're like, yeah, we're a bit fed up of this. Like, should we do something else? And, you know, so that happened. And it's natural in a band's life. A band starts, a band's going to end at some point. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's one of those things. Circle of life, isn't it? And I understand what you're saying there, because it was kind of something that I touched on in a previous episode on here. And it was talking about sort of like that creative fulfillment. If you don't have that core element that brings you all together, particularly when you're in such a setting like you're working as a band, it's very collaborative and what have you. If you don't have that core motivation between you all that drives you forward, you can't force that. You can help it sort of grow like a flower, but you can't force it. And
no, it needs to be something that sort of it just happens, which could lead me on to my new band. It's crazy different, the experience. I'm not saying it's better than my experience with Wolf Peak, because I will always... Wolf Peak was my first ever band. I'd only been really singing for a year before I got into Wolf Peak, like really gigging on my own. Played a gig at a pub and some guy came up to me, which was Aaron, the bass player, who actually owns R&T, not owns it, runs it in a way as a manager. And he said, oh, I want to be in a band with you. So we started the band from there. So this new band isn't like better than Wolf Peak, but I find myself, when I play a new song to the new lads, they've got the same expression on their faces as when I was writing it. Like, they're really pumped to like get to it and get making it. And they'll point out lyrics that they really like, or like guitar parts. And it just makes me feel like, oh, these guys just like the music. Like, they're ready to be creative. And we're all sort of aiming towards this certain point. And then we all want the music to go in the same direction. So it's strange, actually, because in a way, writing with Wolf Peak was a bit more like fun. And I know it sounds bad, but like, cause I was always trying to make it so that the lads would still enjoy it, but it would still be like my thing. So I'd be like, I can't even explain it. Like, try to add things in from their genres that they're like, whereas with this new band, I can pretty much write anything as long as it's a good song, a good tune. They'll buzz off it just because they're really into their indie rock and like pop music. They're just really hyped about anything that brings to the table, which is great because they're like, It's a different sensation when writing a song with these, with the new band, the Exhales, in case anybody's wondering, and with Wolf Peak. So it's, yeah, I don't really know where I was going with this, mate, but
hey, no, it's a great point. You know, you've touched on a couple of different things there. I mean, it fundamentally sounds like you've just found that like what we were talking about before. It just sounds like you found that kind of core motivation that's bringing you all together again, because, you know, no surprise here, you're all gelling with the same kind of musical vision, and that's always evolving, it's always developing, but you've just found a group of people that at this time you're able to share that with.
Yeah, it's even weirder because when I was moving to Glasgow, I was under the impression that it would take me about 2 years to make a band, because I thought I'd be going to gigs and like try to nick people from bands. But anyway, I met these lads on social media, and it's crazy how music can connect people. So like these three lads that are in my band, I've known them. Well, I've known the lead guitarist probably less than 2 months, right? And he's my best mate. It's so weird. We're like brothers already. And they don't hate me, even though I'm English and they're Scottish, which is quite nice.
That's quite a rarity, that as well. That is a rarity. I just wondered what the journey was in terms of time between the end of Wolf Peak and the beginning of the Exhales.
About 2 years' time, because lockdown didn't allow you to really start anything. I started talking to the lads, and not just the lads that I'm in the band with now, multiple musicians. So it was always going on from when Wolf Peak ended. I didn't know it was going to be the Exhales, and I didn't even know it was going to be in Glasgow. It went great. Obviously, we've had a few changes. There was a different bass player and a different guitarist at first. Everything progresses. You know, they were both great musicians, great people. But at the point in life where we were starting this band, they weren't able to commit quite as much as I needed them to. So that had to change. And it's sad. But at the end of the day, after getting rid of those two great musicians and great people, I ended up meeting two other great people that were great musicians and were so like the lead guitarist, he's in college studying music because he wants to be a musician. He doesn't have anything that kind of gets in the way. He's like, he's a bit like me. He knows what he wants, and he's going to go for it full pelt. So yeah, that band lined up. And then when we got the band, we ended up finding a practice space, and normally practice spaces are like very expensive and very hard to get. And it's very hard to get the date that you want. Literally, the first person I messaged was like, yeah, 20 quid for 3 hours. You can have the day you want. And it was brilliant, mate. And in the practice space, there's loads of, because it's like a huge, huge warehouse, like a storage facility, massive old building. And like a good portion of the bands from Glasgow actually practice there. There's a band called The Snuts. I don't know if you've heard of them, like indie rock kind of stuff. They recently beat Demi Lovato to number one on Radio One, and they practice below me. So it's everything, mate. It's just...
What a crazy turn of events, that.
It's bonkers, mate. Just because everything, you don't expect everything to go. So in this day and age, you prepare yourself for things to go wrong. You don't prepare yourself for things to go perfectly, and it did, which is, I probably jinxed it now, touch wood. We're probably going to, you see it on Facebook, we split up or something like
that. We're broken up.
Yeah. But like everything, man, and it's, and because we practice in that space with multiple bands and these guys, the Snuts, I remember I hadn't really listened to them and I came out of practice one day and I saw these lads and they were packing up the gear to go somewhere and I was like, oh, do you want a hand? Anyway, I expected they'd have a van. They had a huge, and I mean huge tour bus, right? This huge, massive thing. And I was like, on Monday, I have to go to work. And these guys are going to be God knows where in a tour bus, having fun, doing what I want to do. So it's quite driving because it's so close to you. And you see that somebody in the same situation with you has made it work. So
it's bonkers, yeah. Mate. It's just so reaffirming, isn't it? It's it must just help you sort of feel like you're really progressing towards something. How much influence do you take from, it's a bit of a formal word, but your contemporaries, I don't know, the Snuts, for example, how much are you sort of picking from ideas that they are doing, or are you just completely got your own vision moving forward with that?
So I'm going to tell you one thing. From your hand expressions, you're doing that thing as if like there's one line. I always think of it as there's two parallel lines and they both need each other. So you need to have your own thing and know what you're going to get, right? But then you look at the bands on the other line, you get to look at these bands that have done it and have done it right. So you take things from them. Like, obviously, I'm going to take inspiration from the biggest band in Glasgow because people like that music. So I'm going to do what they did, but I'm not, you don't nick it. I mean, you do sometimes, but you just don't tell people.
You just don't admit it.
But yeah, it's not like, for me anyway, I feel like there is my very set idea of what I want to do, but then running just alongside it is me consciously being aware of what other bands are doing to make it work. Everybody in a local music scene feeds off each other. That's just how it works. It's a little ecosystem. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like kind of a subconscious kind of connection, if you will.
Yeah, like you don't even know that you're taking inspiration from them. But then like I wrote a full song the other day, like a full song. I was fuming at the end of it because I went on like my phone, just listening to music. And it was a song by a band from Glasgow, but with just different words. And I was like, oh my God.
Oh, no.
So you don't, half the time, you don't even realize you do it. But that's the beauty of it, because everything that you're listening to, it does just float around in your brain. Even if you're not aware that it's there, when you pick up the guitar or when you start singing a melody, there's all these little influences that are in your head that you don't know are there. So that's why you see a lot of people getting sued, mate, because they don't realize it comes from somewhere until they realize that it comes from somewhere. You know what I mean? But
yeah, no. There's been enough cases of that, haven't there?
Yeah, man. Like that, you know that Ed Sheeran song, the Bad Habit.
Yeah.
Like that is literally like three different songs. So there's like a song from the 90s, and I can't remember how it goes. But you know the main like rhythm in the background, like the little synthesizer thing.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, I wish I knew the song. I think I've got it in a group chat with my lads, but it's literally, I swear down, it's the same riff. But like,
well, it was the same thing with that Robin Thicke song back in the day, wasn't it? Well, wasn't that nicked from a Marvin Gaye or I think it was Blurred Lines he got done for, but like that was just a downright ripoff of a song from back in the day.
That Robin Thicke song, not many people know this, but there's a band, Hard Fi, right? And they had a song called Hard to Beat. And Robin Thicke, it's the same vocal melody. So I don't know whether they nicked it off Marvin Gaye or whatever, or like, it just shows you that multiple bands can sort of create the same thing without realizing that they're creating the same thing. Like Robin Thicke probably did purposely rip that off Marvin Gaye, because that's that kind of genre. You do that thing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like Drake, for instance, he's just dropped a new track and it's that Too Sexy song, you know, like from back in the day. He sampled that. So yeah, it's weird that you're allowed to sample a song, but you're not allowed to take, like, say if you ripped a song off and you knew you'd ripped a song off, right? But you were open about it. So you basically approached it as if like, oh, I used it as a sample. Do you reckon you'd still get hate for it? Or do you reckon they'd be like, oh, that's fine, because he's admitting to taking it? Do you reckon it's the fact that somebody tries to deny the fact that they've sort of pinched an idea from somebody else that makes it bad?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I kind of do agree with you, because I mean, you know, the irony is there's Blurred Lines and it's
yeah,
and you know, I think with the kind of society that we live in now, honesty is appreciated more than ever. And I think if you can be a little bit self-deprecating to the right degree, and you can sort of admit, hey, you know, this is what I've done, this is what I did it for.
Yeah. But this is my own swing on it. Like,
yeah, yeah. You know, maybe that's a bit more endearing. Is that that's the word? Is it endearing?
So you're like basically showing how much you liked that person's song that you went and it inspired yourself. Do you know what I mean? But like, it is a strange one, because I, especially in Wolf Peak, I ripped so much Catfish off. You know, Capturing the Bottlemen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I ripped them off so hard, and then I met the guy. Right, I was flying to Budapest to see them play live. So I always tell this story. That's why I'm putting it in, mate. It's my little claim to fame. But earlier that day in the airport, I joked to my girlfriend Chloe. I said, "Oh, if you see any famous people, let me know." And she joked like, "Oh, you probably see somebody from Coronation Street at the most." Anyway, we're sat on this plane, and Van McCann from Capturing the Bottlemen walks in the plane. So I'm telling Chloe, and she's like, "Yeah, yeah, funny." She looks up, it's like, "Oh, it's actually him." Anyway, I'm having a chat with him, and I was literally just like, "Oh, mate, I've ripped off this and this from you, my band." And he was like buzzing about it, he was laughing his head off, because he was like, "Oh, I ripped off Stereophonics for that thing that you've ripped off me." So it's like generations of people just ripping each other off, because at the end of the day, there's only a certain amount of chords, and there's only a certain amount of things you could do on an instrument, unless you're somebody like Jimi Hendrix. Not saying that if Jimi Hendrix was just come out into the scene now, he wouldn't be as good as he was, because he was amazing. But the main reason people like that are so big is because back then there was nothing. It was so new, because music had been this one thing for so long. But now, with social media and streaming platforms and the internet as a whole, there is so much music that you can't help but see similarities between two people's songs. Do you know what I mean? The last band we probably had that was able to be fully, that would now, as far as I'm aware, the last big rock band of all time was Oasis. And the reason they were the last big rock band of all time was because the internet came out just after they did their last show, or when they were doing their last show. So it's like, because the way that you digest music, you don't really get people that are like super, super fans anymore, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think you get... I think every, because it kind of ties in with what we were talking about before. I don't think there will be ever the same degree of super fans that there were with Oasis or the Stone Roses or anyone like that, or Rolling Stones back in the day. I think that era of fandom is gone, but I think it's manifested in different ways, and not necessarily for the better. It just manifests itself in different ways, particularly through the cliche, social media. It shows itself through there, and a lot more aesthetic driven. Everything now is about what kind of like merch the bands are dropping, and what kind of like aesthetic they're creating. And yeah, like, that's become more of where the fandom manifests itself. I don't know. What do you think to that?
Well, I mean, to an extent, that's like the fashion side to being in a band, isn't it? To an extent, that's always been a thing. Like when the Stone Roses came about, everybody started wearing bucket hats and baggy clothes. And when Jimi Hendrix was about, everybody, back then it was just flower power. So that's what everybody was just, I think that's always been a thing. But now it's become more of a thing because the music is, I don't want to sound bad, but less of a thing. Like people will listen to an average band because the people in that band are just cool and super trendy. And the sound, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so like, I mean, to clarify, I wasn't talking about it in like a cultural sense. I was more talking about it in terms of like a capitalist kind of thing. Like it's more, it's more capitalist driven on the fashion, the merch,
it's brand sort of like everybody's trying to be a brand. Whereas I get what you mean. Yeah, it sells, doesn't it?
It does.
It sells.
So fundamentally, yeah.
I wish I could go back in time and start my band, because there's that argument, like people used to believe it was so hard to become a famous musician because people would have to go into a physical record shop and out of hundreds of records, pick up your record.
There was a bit that I remember Mick Jagger saying in the documentary that got made about the Rolling Stones years ago. It's called Crossfire Hurricane. And there's a bit in that where he's talking about where essentially he was for a time being like a method actor. Like he was going through personas, these ego changes, and he was finding himself sort of moving onto the stage, being that character, that extra elaborate performer, but then going back off stage and going back to the dressing room and getting changed out of the stage gear. It was something very difficult to shake off. I mean, do you find that? Do you find yourself getting so deep into the performance that you do feel like that?
You do. You do become, as cheesy as it sounds, a different person when you're playing on the stage. Because I'm actually like, I've always struggled. You might not know it, because when I was younger, I was quite noisy and obnoxious, but I actually struggle with anxiety and stuff like that. So like, As soon as your first foot hits that stage, it's like you become somebody else. To be honest, it's the best way that I overcome nerves, because I kind of think like, oh, well, it's not me who's playing. You know what I mean? So like, I don't think about it until I'm on stage, and then I'm that person that needs to be like getting the crowd jumping and acting like a weirdo and dancing around. But I've been told I have noodle legs. That's my move. My legs just go a bit crazy when I'm playing guitar. I get noodle legs.
Nice.
But that's funny.
Oh, brilliant. Honestly, I'm gonna have to come to an Exhale show and see these noodle legs in action.
You do, mate.
But yeah, oh, honestly, man, this has been so much fun. I've enjoyed this. This has been
the most fun I've had in a while, mate.
It's been so good talking to you again. And we're going on overtime here, but I don't care. I want to talk again briefly about the Exhales and sort of where you're at now, because I think you're working on an EP at the moment, aren't you?
It's not an EP. The reason I'm not doing an EP is because it's something that comes in Barrow. There's this thing not a lot of people talk about, but it's the dreaded EP curse, because it seems like any original band that does an EP shortly after split up happened with my band. So I'm not doing it. We're doing a single.
Okay, right.
So we're going in the studio in November with a guy called Bruce, and he's bloody fantastic. I don't know if you know of a Scottish band called Father Son.
Yeah, I've heard of them. Yeah.
He did one of my favorite songs by them. It's called Always, and I love the production on it, and I found out that he did it, and then he's wanting to work with us, which is crazy. Like, because I just sent a few people like my demo, because I did it in my bedroom, and he got back to me, he's like, that's something I'd love to work on. So it's nice, because with Wolf Peak we just pay and go with anybody, whereas obviously I'm still paying for this single. That's life. That's one of the other things you have to spend a lot of money on when you're a musician, is bloody recording. At the end of the day, it's just nice that I know that I'm going to pay the money, and it's going to be better because he likes the song. So it's going to make him, when he's in the room making it, he's going to enjoy doing it. So that's the only advice I'd give. If somebody's listening that is in a band and wanting to start recording, make sure the producer wants to work on the song, because you'll get the better results. It also means if you actually have to spend a couple more hours, they might do it for free. Do you know what I mean? Because they're enjoying it. But this guy, he's worked with everybody in Glasgow, Twin Atlantic. And then I can't think of any others, mate, off the top of my head, because I've only just woke up, if I'm honest with you, mate.
you've done pretty well to do an hour if you've just woken up.
Just woken up. I'd say I was up at about 11:45.
Just living the rock star life and that.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. Chilling and maxing and relaxing. That's
living the life. Go. Yeah.
But yeah, we're recording that single, and it'll be released sometime like early next year. And we hope to be gigging by early next year. So awesome. I'll let you know when we're doing shows. And if we might be coming down to Barrow's playing in the Odd Frog. So I'll let you know when that happens.
That'll be class. Yeah, we should definitely get something on the cards again, and we'll maybe do another one of these.
Get all the boys in on it.
Yeah,
so you can hear some real Scottish accent.
Yeah, because I mean, I've got all these new microphones that I just got recently, and I've been looking for an occasion where I can use them. So I don't know, maybe we could do an in person sesh. Maybe get this take this podcasting thing to the next level. We've got to wrap up, man. But this has been, I've really enjoyed this, and we're going to get something on the cards again for when you come back. And I just got one final thing to finish off with. We do this at the end of each episode, and it's just a nice way to sort of tie things all together. And you've been doing it as we've been going along, giving little nuggets of advice and little tips and tricks for anyone listening that's looking to get into music or do something creative and that kind of thing. But if you had to if you had to boil it down to one thing to take away from this episode, what would be the lucrative advice that you would give to somebody listening?
I think it's just, oh man, anything I've already said. And also, I did this thing where I'd always try and compare my music to other people's music and compare myself to my idols. Not a healthy thing to do. You just got to be yourself 100% of the time. Do what you want to do, and there will be people out there that enjoy what you do and what you create. And melody is key. Keep that in mind.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Don't use too many long words. It's not cool. Short words with a good melody.
Don't bore us, get to the chorus, all of that.
Exactly.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Lucrative with Jack Hayes there. What a great guy. What a genuine one. And I can't believe it's been so long since we actually spoke to each other, but hopefully there'll be many more to come, and it'll be nice to get Jack on the show again when his new single comes out with The Exhales. Go and check them out. They are in the episode notes for this one, so go and have a listen to them. Go and check them out on social media and give them some support, because they can definitely use some right now. I'll be back next week with a brand new episode for you. I promise I will be back. Not planning on taking any more breaks or doing any more crazy nightclub nights, so should be all good in theory. So catch me next week for a brand new episode. Got some really exciting stuff coming your way. Have a great week. Hope you stay well, and I'll see you on the next one.